Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Internet Marketing brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin and colleague Scott Colnut discuss: is guest posting doomed? All coming up in Internet Marketing.
So I'm joined in the studio today by a colleague of mine at Site Visibility, Scott. Is it all right, Scott, just to kind of quickly get you to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your background and some of the areas of interest and expertise you have around the world of search?
Yeah, sure. So I started at Site Visibility just over a month ago now.
Yep.
My role here is Digital Marketing Manager. Came from another well-known SEO company called Freshe, just down the road. I'm sure they'll appreciate me mentioning them on this podcast. had a great time, good grounding there. Really got stuck in into it here straight away. And my role encompasses, I guess, what is the role of an SEO these days? It's social search. Social search, as some people like to call it. PPC, all of it really. Digital marketing, as most people are going towards.
And I mean, one of the topics we kind of wanted to have a chat about today, and kind of, so I suppose a fairly sort of freeform, loose kind of conversation, is about kind of some of the changes that have been sort of coming about recently in terms of guest posting, and perhaps even less so actual changes in terms of how Google treat guest posts, but kind of an expectation of some changes that might occur. So I suppose to set the scene for listeners who might not be kind of following SEO as closely as people who kind of specialise in that area, you know, over the last 12 months ago, Google made a major update to their Google algorithm, which was known as Google Penguin. And the way that they framed that was that it was intended to kind of end the influence of manipulative link building, and a number of tactics that perhaps were kind of on the, maybe, you know, people already knew were risky, or even in some cases were kind of on a grey area between risky and not risky. And, you know, that's changed quite dramatically, the tactics in which people have been using to build links. But in many cases, people have kind of turned from all that kind of directory submission, article syndication, link buying, spinning of content, and kind of taken all that time and effort that they were spending on that and moved it straight into guest posting, which kind of is a tactic where perhaps the line is a little bit more complex. Is that kind of fair to say, Scott?
Yeah, so I started I started in the industry a couple of years ago now, and when I first started really guest blogging, it was kind of like maybe at its peak.
Yeah.
Like you said, Panda came around, and I think site owners were, obviously they're worried about their on-site content, and they thought one way to improve their on-site content and also to tap into kind of freshness, which we've seen over the last couple of years, was to have a regularly updated blog with content. So agencies and freelancers, they naturally looked to guest blogging as a way, because site owners wanted the content, they could produce the content, it was a great relationship. And naturally, people don't necessarily foresee some of the problems that are going to happen a couple of years on. And what we realised, and probably what a lot of people should have realised back then, is that really, that's, we didn't really want the content, we wanted the relationship. And that's where a lot of people hopefully are moving towards now. But really, in the last, I don't know, maybe since the turn of the year, and I'm seeing a lot more kind of site owners, a lot more bloggers, which are a lot more protective of their own sites and willing to kind of out agencies. They're fed up of agencies contacting them. And so that relationship, there's definitely room for that relationship to exist. But really, they're looking to improve their brand, they're entrepreneurial, and we need to kind of support that and figure out the best way to work with them. And that's not necessarily giving them content anymore.
And I mean, I suppose the challenge has sort of become that, whereas, you know, and there's one of the great things about kind of how I think search marketers approach their job is that they're always trying to do things in the most efficient way possible, if you know what I mean. That's kind of inherently built into, I think, the psyche of, you know, search agencies and search professionals, that they're always kind of thinking about, well, let's find something that's repetitive within the work that I do, and then try and find ways to increase the efficiency in that. In some cases, that means automation of things. That isn't necessarily always bad, you know. Kind of like, if you can use a tool to save research, and if that tool is essentially just repeating a human process, there's elements to that. But inevitably, what that does seem to mean, that whenever there's a tactic that is perhaps started out with the greatest of intentions, that inevitably the kind of automation and the repetition and the kind of attempts to scale that process can sometimes end up with what is being described as that tactic not really having the kind of connections. So it's changed. So
I think of infographics when you say
it's exactly that. And that's also, I suppose, maybe next on that kind of progression that you've got there. So yeah, I think that there's a danger of the people concentrating on the next best thing. And if they kind of put all of the, I suppose the perspective I've got on kind of when we have these discussions is that I don't think any tactic that isn't against Google's webmaster guidelines is in itself inherently risky. The risk is in the lack of diversification, you know. It's the lack of so if you're relying exclusively on guest posting as a means of building links and doing that excessively with very little quality control and very little concern of actually, you know, the motivation that should be there behind that, I think that's kind of part of the equation.
I'd agree with that. There was a post and I forget who it's by, but it was on UMoz this week, and it described how if you stick to one tactic, such as guest blogging, such as infographics, and your campaigns are built on that for kind of a longer period of time, just looking at your link profile in a really simple way from Majestic or Open Site Explorer or whatever, you can quickly see, oh, for the last 6 months they've been doing infographics and so forth. So like you said, it's not always what you're doing, because, you know, there's still a place for guest blogging. Otherwise, I wouldn't have mentioned even the UMoz post. It's the guest blogging itself, and there's still a place for infographics. But like you said, it's about diversity as well, and it's kind of not sticking to that and using it as a tactic. It should just be within kind of your ammunition.
Yeah, and I suppose that, you know, yeah, that's definitely it, isn't it? And it's kind of, yeah, my one tip for all listeners would be is that there's no one silver bullet to it. And actually, like, there's, you know, inevitably, guest blogging, as an example, is going to bring new links of a certain type, because blogs, although there's a huge amount of diversity in them, they essentially are the same, right? So the structure's part of it as well. So you're going to have a link that you get on a website that is going to fall with a certain level of trust, because most blogs kind of fall within a certain area of the website. They're a lot more trusted than some of the directory sites or kind of low quality sites, but they're never, in many cases, never going to be as trusted as where it's a professional running the site. And that's not, you know, kind of, that's the out, that, yeah, it's not kind of fundamental that as soon as you turn professional you become trusted quality, but there's kind of patterns in the behaviour of those sites that kind of point it in certain directions. And, you know, it's one of those ones where, although you know, these blogs are going to be similar, there's different types of links that you're going to want to have, and different types of, you know, websites that you're going to want to point quality to. And if you're only doing guest blogging, you're only going to, like, get links of those certain types. And it's actually, well, what am I really trying to achieve? And I think, you know, I think internally here at Site Visibility, and I think across the industry as a whole, there's this kind of shift that, you know, whereas in the past people might have said, how do you judge the quality of a link? And the answer might have been, you know, page rank, or, you know, maybe domain authority is kind of SEOmoz is kind of proxy of that. Whereas I think increasingly the real barometer of is a link worth having or not, is will it send me traffic, if you know what I mean, and will that traffic do what I want it to do?
Do we even need the link at all in the guest post?
Yeah.
The best example again, you, if you've got a guest post and you've kind of got it on the site that you wanted to get it on, your company is referenced within that post, and it gets 1,000 kind of retweets and a bunch of likes. That's going to bring you referral traffic. Might not be directly for a link, but people are going to, you know, your brand exposure there, the readership of those sites. So it's all kind of, those are the kind of metrics that I'd be looking at and looking to report on as well.
But then ultimately, there's still that kind of fundamental there that the Google search engine is built on the link graph. So it's this kind of perception that, you know, the way that Google understand authority and, you know, should a site rank over another where they're equally well optimized is still built on links. Now, what that then means is that actually you, by not, you know, getting guest posts without a blog, there's kind of a different strategic objective there, isn't there? And that might be that actually by getting, you know, can you get a post on a higher quality website by not asking for the link? So therefore you're kind of, they see your approach in a very different way, but that then potentially opens up other doors. I suppose the logic of, you know, could you get an article on a very high quality site, you remove the fact that you're asking for a link, so it makes it easier for them to say yes. Do you then open a relationship when they would link to you at a later point down the line, or do you raise your profile to the extent where people will link to you naturally? I suppose is kind of part of the direction you go for there. So we kind of, I think, discussed about kind of the long-term prospects and kind of link, guest blogging in the context of link building as a whole. But if you are going to be kind of carrying out guest blogging, what's the kind of things that you'd be looking for in a website and some of the approaches that you'd recommend in terms of getting in contact with the people who run these websites?
Yeah, well, there are two actually major ones. And the first one is, I see a lot of people use it, and now we're gradually more people using it. Tools like FollowerWonk, SocialBro, and going down the social route and actually seeing, kind of being reactionary to what people have already. Sometimes I look at guest blogging a little bit kind of like, I don't know, buying clothes for your girlfriend. It's a nice gesture to make, but 99% of the time you're going to get it wrong if you kind of decide for them. Same with guest bloggers. If you can kind of look at the topics they're talking about, follow them on Twitter, use those tools, you can start to figure out and kind of be a bit more refined in the actual what you're going to approach them with, rather than just writing the content and giving it to them already. So definitely social aspects. You can just set up kind of feeds and tweet deck or Hootsuite, whatever you do. And
I suppose that's going to give you a lot better success rate as well, isn't it? Because I think the reasons why many guest blog requests fail are kind of, you know, I suppose maybe three reasons. One is the fact that, you know, people are instantly suspicious of it, so therefore they just don't accept guest posts. So there's very little you can do about that, I suppose. One is that then that they don't know you, and the other one is that you don't know their audience. And I think by talking about following them socially, that you solve two of those problems. The first one you're never going to solve. If people don't take guest posts, then, you know, it's going to be tricky. But if you can, you know, use that, if you can retweet their articles that they've written, if you can, you know, comment on their blog posts that they're writing, so when they then go in and approve, so then when your email does come through, it's not just who is Scott, who is Kelvin. It's kind of, okay, I know that their actual readers are mine. And, you know, people sometimes in their guest posts will say, oh, I'm a long-term, you know, a long-term reader of your site, and, you know, I really enjoyed this quick blog post of theirs. And you're faking that, aren't you?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, faking that interest in their blog. But whereas if they know who you are beforehand, then already there's kind of a repertoire there.
There's one other tip which I've started to find kind of more useful over, I guess, the last 6 months. And that's been using a combination of advanced Google operators, you know, all in URL, that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's been slight tweaks that Google have been making to the search tools function. And they've been tweaking and playing and experimenting kind of with that over the last 6 months. And now it's got to the point where you can refine kind of, if for example you're in the UK and you're looking for UK specific blogs, you can look for pages in the UK within the last 24 hours that have mentioned this phrase. So if you know, you know, if you've got a few phrases or kind of topics that you know you're going to be wanting to write about and you think are relevant, just go use those search tools, use those operators, find the kind of sweet combinations that work for you. And then you'll start to find people that are talking about that. It's almost like, it's like the social route, but you're just using the new kind of the updated Google functions for it.
And I think that limiting stuff by time is kind of potentially hugely powerful, isn't it? Because, you know, the request that you make, the contact that you make to someone, is kind of, it happens at a point in time, right? And if you've, you know, is the best point to approach someone about a guest blog after they've recently just published a successful guest blog. You know, that's probably a good time to do them. Or if you want them to write about, you know, they're a travel blogger and you want them to write about Thailand, you know, knowing when they're writing a series of blog posts about Thailand would be a good time to approach them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, just, and they don't even necessarily, again, it doesn't have to be people, it can be a great way if you don't know the writers already, or you haven't got to the point where you've found the sites that you want to post on. It can be a great way of sourcing the actual sites. Obviously, using those operators, using those search tools to actually find the sites to get guest posts on, like as the first stage in the process as well.
Well, yeah, and I mean, yeah, because again, with the time on, isn't it? It's one of those ones where actually a website that's, you know, I know I've done research in the past and found websites where they don't get published very frequently. And actually, purely knowing that they're kind of regularly publishing and have updated recently is a good sort of, if you're gonna, if there could be 1,000 people you could approach, which is probably too many, but say you're at that stage and you've got to try and narrow it down in some way, shape, or form, finding those that are regular bloggers are certainly going to help on that perspective. And in terms of starting those relationships up, all those emails, all that social outreach, any kind of tips on kind of how, you know, you begin that process of talking to people?
I think again, the first thing is don't just send blanket emails. You know, unfortunately, people do get into the habit. Like you said, if you've got 1,000 people to contact. We've just got to move away. It's a lazy approach if you have to do that, and you shouldn't really be doing that. Take a look at their recent posts. Again, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, see what they're doing socially. Just sometimes it's just a really cheesy icebreaker, but it works to show that you're interested in what they're actually doing. And go for that route and start off the conversation about something they've written. Again, even a few compliments, just pick up one or two bullet points as to why you've chosen their site. Some responses I've often got kind of receive whilst doing outreach is, why have you chose me? What's the benefit for you? And often what I go back with is, I've looked at your site and actually you've got a great readership, you've got a brand going on, those are big ticks for me. You know, all those other metrics where we were talking about before, those old school kind of page authority, main authority, I'm not really interested. You know, 3-4 years ago I might have been interested, but now it's because I can see that you're active and you've got readership.
I suppose kind of connected to that as well, that kind of in that outreach, that I think if you can, you know, even like, so you've gone through that stuff that maybe, you know, you followed them on Twitter, you've added their, you know, Facebook, you've liked their Facebook page, you've taken a kind of, you know, 3-4 weeks to absorb yourself in their content, you know, you kind of retweet some of their articles that they've written, you know, all that type of thing. And then when you eventually make that contact via email, I don't think that you need to be mentioning the link, or even that kind of you're talking about guest blogging in that first email, really. Maybe it's a kind of, you know, really enjoyed the piece you did about this. Have you thought about, you know, writing an article about this?
Yeah.
You know, where actually you're not even pitching yourself then at that stage, or kind of, you know, that, you know, congratulations on these last couple of posts. I can see that they've done really well on Twitter, you know, well done. Yeah. And, or kind of getting them to do something small, right? Because, you know, there's kind of, you know, there's all kinds of behavioural economics and psychology that says if someone does something for you once, they'll do something for you again afterwards. So it's that, you know, can you ask for something small first, where it might not be the link you're asking for. It's like, well, could you be asking for them to, you know, I know you've got a great following on Twitter, any chance you could tweet this article we've written recently? Or actually maybe kind of saying, well, we've got our blog and we're, you know, interviewing, you know, we'd love to interview you for our blog. And then you're almost using that first opportunity where you're not asking them, well, you're still asking them for something, but it's kind of something that's much easier for them to say yes to. And once they said that first yes, I think you're in a much stronger position to ask for other things afterwards.
Yeah, and to be honest, you might even naturally get that link that you may have been looking for anyway, because if you invite them onto your site, you think they're not going to link to that? They're going to link to that. They're going to want to let people know that they've been interviewed or whatever. So, but there's one thing that's crucial to what you said as well is, not talking about the link in the first instance is really important, not only for the relationship purpose, because it's really robotic to just go and ask for links. They see it 1,000 times a day. But also, there is that kind of risk now at the point. Bloggers are protective of their own brand and own sites, and if you do continue to go to people, there is that risk that you'll get outed by a blogger and they'll kind of write a nasty little piece on you because you were a little bit robotic and didn't really appreciate their site. So there's that to think about a little bit.
Cool. Now, I think some great insight there, and I mean, I think it's, you know, if we were to sum it up in a couple of sentences, is that, you know, never rely on any one single approach of link building. And if, you know, you are relying heavily on guest posting at the moment, particularly if you're using kind of some of those networks that are out there that kind of aid that process of meeting people who might take your guest blog post. That doesn't mean they're not viable, that doesn't mean they're dangerous now, it doesn't mean they don't work, but kind of being pragmatic, it's something that certain people within the industry are taking to a real extreme at the moment, and really what you want to be doing is kind of diversifying your risk, and when you are doing guest blogging, making sure that you're getting the links from the people that are really going to make a difference to your site, and that normally means because they're really good websites, and if they're a really good website, you can't use an automated robotic approach to get them to write for you. Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for that, Scott. I really enjoyed that. And I know that there's, you know, we've got plenty planned internally at Site Visibility in terms of writing about this on the blog in the next couple of weeks. So do keep your eyes open, because there'll probably be more about link building and guest posts coming up soon.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150, and you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.